The Tom Woods Show, episode 844.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
All you men out there, if you're looking for a smooth, close shave, you need Harry's Razors. They're going to let you try out their shave set for free. Just pay shipping at harrys.com. And when you use code Woods, you get a post-shave balm for free as well. Check it out at harrys.com using code Woods. Hello, everybody. Tom Woods here. The Libertarian Party is our topic of discussion today. And joining me to talk about it is Karen Ann Harlos, who knows a heck of a lot more about the history and the current composition of the Libertarian Party than I do. So I thought, let's see what's going on in the aftermath of the 2016 election. Where does the Libertarian Party stand and where is it going? Karen Ann Harlos is Communications Director for the Libertarian Party of Colorado and the Colorado State Coordinator of the Libertarian Party Radical Caucus. She's also Region 1 Representative of the Libertarian National Committee, representing Alaska, Arizona, Colorado, Hawaii, Kansas, Montana, Utah, Washington, and Wyoming. Karen Ann, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Tom. I am so thrilled to be here.
I have a feeling there are a lot of people in the Libertarian Party these days whose knowledge of the party really doesn't go much beyond the candidacies of Bob Barr and Gary Johnson. But the party does have a long history and has had a lot of disagreements and debates over the years. Comment on that.
And that's so true. And let me tell you something a little bit amazing. I haven't been a libertarian very long. I've been a libertarian under 3 years. And I am, as you know, on the national committee. But I dove right in and I was very fascinated by the history from the beginning and what a rich tradition and history we have. And a lot of the new people, I don't think may realize that a lot of these debates have happened before and a lot of these things have been anticipated before and haven't got into the fact that we're not, quote unquote, an issues party like the two old parties sometimes are, that we're a deeply rooted ideological party. And my passion has been to light them on fire for the same thing that I found when I found the Libertarian Party. And that is that deep ideological roots that we have that will give us consistent principled positions on no matter any issue that comes up.
Tell me about the LP Radical Caucus. I have known of its existence, but I don't know much about it other than its role has been to try to keep the Libertarian Party clearly on the path of plumb line libertarianism and to be hardcore and Rothbardian. Tell me more.
Sure. The Radical Caucus has existed on and off in different iterations since the party began. Actually, the very first Radical Caucus was personally invited to be started by David Nolan, and I believe in 1972. And it's been on and off. I think we're on the third iteration now, and they aren't the same caucus. We share the same names and a lot of the same ideology, but there hasn't been a continuity of leadership or focus in that sense. The current Radical Caucus was formed in 2006 after the mass deletion of the older, much more detailed and much more radical platform. So it was formed in response to that to keep the party on a principled course. So this particular iteration of the caucus has existed since 2006. We've become formally organized since right before the last convention. And right before that is when my involvement started. But it's been about 10 years with this caucus. And yes, we are indeed, we would call ourselves the radical base, radical meaning to the root. So in the good sense of the word, you could call us the fundamentalists of libertarianism. I don't like bringing that word in because it has the bad religious connotations, but we believe in the fundamentals of libertarian ideology. And we basically revolve around 4 points, which I'll just shoot off in quick order. And if you have any questions on them, particularly the first one, which tends to trigger some people, but we revolve around the ideas of natural rights are utilitarian, radical abolitionism, principled populism, and most importantly, that gets a lot of people, is no particular orderism.
Well, actually, I'm most interested in no particular orderism. I'm not entirely sure I know what that is, but I'm going to take a guess. I know there are some libertarians who would say, yeah, we want to get rid of a lot of what government does, or maybe all of what government does. but we have to do it in a particular order. We have to do this first, then this, then this, then this, or they've got some kind of algorithm they use to figure out which thing goes where, and forget it. And you're saying, who needs any of this? If we can get rid of some state activity, let's go ahead and do it. Is that the argument?
Exactly. It's funny that libertarians who generally scoff at centrally planning things think that they can centrally plan the road to liberty. If you and I sat down, we certainly would have a list of things that we would prefer to do first. Everyone does, obviously. But things don't work in that manner and in reality. So what you need to do is strike at the root at every opportunity that's presented to you. And it might not be the one that you would prefer to come first. The way that we say it is that the removal of one harmful government policy should never be held hostage for the removal of another, because this throws self-imposed barriers in the way and it makes for obligatory gradualism. And the example we like to use, and you know, some of your listeners will not agree with this position, but it's our position. For example, saying that borders should be opened only after welfare is eliminated would be unacceptable to us. The solution is to push for both changes. And if we open the borders only to find that the welfare state is increased, then we use that additional pressure to push to remove the welfare state. Otherwise, we have what I like to call, and what I have borrowed the term from Tom Knapp, is Stockholm libertarianism. Both sides have a hostage that neither of them are willing to give up, and all that happens is that nothing happens.
All right, now tell me what you mean by principled populism.
It means that we need to be a mass participation party. A lot of people will accuse radicals of being a mutual self-admiration club, or that we just want to be, you know, a coffee collage. We actually believe we need to be out there in mass participatory politics, running candidates, running campaigns. But it needs to be a principled, a sort of pragmatism, but it's a principled pragmatism, so that we should trust that we are. What I find with libertarians sometimes is we unconsciously act like we think we're smarter than everybody else, and we hold these truths. And you'll appreciate this with the Christian reference. We're kind of like Gnostics in a way. We have this secret knowledge that we get, but you know, if we expose it to everybody else, they just can't handle it. Well, we believe that the general average man can handle this, and that we can trust them if they are exposed to a consistent principled libertarian message, that a lot of people will be able to handle it just fine and move forward on the road to liberty. We think that hiding or abandoning principled positions is completely ineffective to sustain us as a new movement and to grow people into new libertarians.
I'd like you to discuss the Dallas Accord of, I guess, 1974. I hadn't known about this until you got in contact with me, and my understanding of it is that it makes clear that the LP, and this surprised me, the LP takes no official position on, in the endgame scenario, whether the state is to exist or not. And by implication, this means that a Rothbardian anarcho-capitalist ought to feel completely at home in the Libertarian Party and is not some kind of weirdo reject on the fringes. So talk about the Dallas Accord for us.
This is my wheelhouse. This is my passion. I go to conferences and speak on this issue. We have to back up a little bit and realize that, okay, back to the founding of the party in 1972. Before the party moved forward, the delegates decided that they needed to embed a statement of principles into the party that would guide it going forward and distinguish us from other parties. And a statement of principles was passed unanimously, which is a small miracle in itself to get libertarians to pass anything unanimously, in 1972. And they had decided that this would be virtually impossible to change. They embedded it in our bylaws with a super, super quorum and a super, super majority, meaning it could only be passed by 7/8 of registered delegates at any convention. But they realized how serious that was for just this group in 1972 to do this. So they gave like a 2-year cooling off period where they said, we've passed it. Let's think about it for 2 years. We'll come back in 1974. We'll have an opportunity to amend it this one time with just a 2/3 vote, after which the 7/8 barrier will be locked into place. When they came back in 1974, they could have scrapped it, they could have rewritten it, they could have watered it down. But in fact, what they did is made it more radical. By 1974, there was a schism starting to develop between the party minarchists and the party anarchists. this. And in order to keep the party together and move forward on a libertarian direction, they decided to alter the statement of principles in order to explicitly allow for an anarchist point of view to peacefully coexist in the party and to have the statement of principles position of the party when it came to the ultimate existence of the state to be agnosticism. And that, in effect, is still in effect because it's in the statement of principles, which is virtually impossible to amend. And if you take a look at the Libertarian Party bylaws, the statement of principles is enshrined. It is stated as it is that through by which the Libertarian Party was founded and through which liberty shall prevail. Our purpose statement is to give voice to and implement the statement of principles. Every platform plank cannot, it's judged against the statement of principles. Every resolution is judged against the statement of principles. It's over and over and over. So as far as the edits to the statement of principles, that was the part of the Dallas Accord that was formalized. There were some side agreements that have somewhat been lost to the mists of time that people try to claim were part of the agreement. They may not have been. Those weren't entrenched in our documents. But as far as the fact that this is a party that is open to party minarchists and party anarchists, and that the party's ultimate position on the existence of the state as an end game is agnosticism. And something else that also happened between 72 and 74 is the 72 statement of principles assigned a positive role to the state. The state should do this. The state should do that. In the edits in 1974, it was flipped to the role of the state, if any, would be a negative role. It must not do this. It must not do that. And that is a very profound change that I don't think a lot of people really grasp the implications of.
Let me play devil's advocate with you, not so much because I disagree with your principles, because I don't, but rather on these grounds that isn't it the case that, for example, in the Republican Party, there's a lot of arguing over the platform every 4 years or arguing about the platform. And the party activists argue about the platform, and sometimes they get some real victories. They get things in the platform or reaffirmed, and they're really happy. But the people running the show, who don't care about the platform anyway, let them have those victories, and then they go ahead and nominate John McCain or whoever else. Well, isn't there a similar analogy going on with the LP? That I get that obviously you want your statement of principles to be good and sound and right and reliable and nice and libertarian. But, you know, in the long run, I mean, what does it matter if you're going to put up candidates who are total bores and admit that they haven't read the platform or they don't care about it?
You know, that's a danger in any group or any political movement. But when you have that entrenched, if people were not happy, and I'm not stating, you know, one way or another, I think our last ticket did fantastic things for the party and brought in these wonderful new libertarians. But if the delegates next convention are not happy, they could nominate a different type or the same kind of candidate. But we could always call back to something that is in fact entrenched. It's not just mere opinion. We have something that is embedded as a depth charge in our documents to call other people to. But people are going to be people and choose how they wish to. But the thing is, in theory, if enough delegates had decided after the fact that they didn't like what was going on, they could always petition the LNC to disqualify if they wished based upon certain principles in the statement of principles. Now, I generally think that that would be suicidal, but it is options that we have because we have some embedded principles. But delegates are going to pick who they're going to pick. And as a member of a voluntary association of a political party, I completely respect that decision-making process.
All right, let's pause to thank our sponsor. We'll come right back. Folks, I hope by now you've come to the conclusion that I am a pretty good advice giver. Well, I've got some advice for the men out there, and that is if you want a smooth, comfortable shave, check out Harry's Razors. They've made me a convert after years of using electric. The story of Harry's is a great one. It's two regular guys, Jeff and Andy, who thought razor blades cost too darn much. So they started their own company. They sell directly over the internet, so there's no drugstore markup, and you get less expensive blades that you love a whole lot more. At one point, I actually had given up using a blade because I couldn't do it without making myself into a bloody mess. But I now get a smooth, beautiful, wonderful shave thanks to Harry's. Well, Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they want you to try their shave set for free. You heard that right. Just cover shipping when you sign up. Plus, as a special offer for fans of the Tom Woods Show, go to harrys.com right now and enter code WOODS at checkout to get a post-shave balm also free. That's harrys.com, code WOODS. All right, now with a lot of this now in our minds and we know a little bit more about the background, tell me where you see the Libertarian Party today and where it's going. I thought if there had been, well, you know what? I don't even want to assume. What was your position on the nomination of Gary Johnson?
I think Gary did a lot of very wonderful things for our party, and I admire Gary deeply as a person. I think he's one of the genuine good guys. If you're asking as a delegate, did I vote for the nomination of Gary Johnson? No, I did not in either round. But once the delegates had made their choice, I got fully behind our ticket. And in the season that we were in, they have brought tremendous growth to the party. Were there some things I did not agree with? I was very vocal about that. Absolutely, there were. Would I have preferred a more consistently, what I called principled message that stuck much closer to our foundations? Yes, I would. But I do think that Gary did educate the people and open their mind to general libertarian principles to bring them into the party. And it's my job and people like me to further educate them. I don't hold candidates up to be the end all and be all. I hold the end all and be all to be the grassroots activists. You bring the new people in, I will educate them and others like me. And I think that's the healthy way to look at things. But Gary did fantastic things for this party.
What do you think is going to happen in 2020? I don't think Gary Johnson is going to do this a third time. It just, I don't think people are interested anymore. So is there any obvious person on the horizon, or is it really up in the air? Are you hearing any talk? Is there anything you're allowed to share? What do you think?
Well, there's nothing secret, so there wouldn't be anything that I wouldn't be not allowed to share. I think it's a bit premature. I do not see any clear person on the horizon. People have talked about whether Austin Peterson was going to throw his hat in again, and he so far has not indicated, you know, that he would. And what tends to happen, I think, in this party is as it gets to about a year before, we'll start seeing some front runners. And I will think it'll be somebody that we're not even expecting. So it's wide open. It's absolutely wide open. But I do think that with this last campaign, a lot of people are considering us a much more viable option. I think we got our act together in a lot of ways, in our branding and our polish and our message and our enthusiasm and in the attention that some of the more mainstream media outlets have given us. I do think it's going to propel us in 2020. I'm like thrilled about it. The state parties, as you know, I'm involved with the Libertarian Party of Colorado. We saw huge growth. And I can only see that continuing forward for 2020.
How did you come into this? You've only been a Libertarian for 3 years. So that would have been 2013 or 14. What was it that finally clicked and you said, you know what, I'm not going to be whatever I used to be. I'm going to be a Libertarian.
Well, this is actually an interesting story. And I actually became a Libertarian on September 17th, 2014. And that date is notable because it's the date that Ann Coulter said, if you're going to vote Libertarian, give her your address and she'll come drown you. And I remain undrowned, as do very many of us. But it was actually, I was not a political person. I am a former Republican, but I was a rhino. I was a Republican in name only. I didn't really care. I had decided about a year or two before that I wouldn't even vote anymore. I was so disgusted by the whole process. But, you know, you get in arguments with people as we are wont to do. And sometimes you get a little hot under the collar and you throw out words that you might not even know what they mean. And I kind of just threw out there, I think I'm more of a Libertarian. And I realized after I said that I didn't even really know what the word meant. So I went to the website and read the platform and read the statement of principles, which is one reason why I'm so passionate about it now. And literally within the 5 minutes it took me to read the platform, I had a come to Jesus moment. Everything clicked. And I was like, oh my goodness, all of this makes sense. And the next browser tab I opened up was the Secretary of State, switched my voter registration on the spot. And it's been history from there. Just got immediately dove in, because the minute I read those principles, it really did flip a switch and turn my world upside down on the spot.
I have to ask, can you describe divisions that you perceive in the Libertarian Party?
Easily. And this will get into part of the reason, you know, why I think the Radical Caucus is so important. I think that sometimes we have the attitude that we need to moderate our position or position the party as a centrist party. We're not a centrist party. We're a libertarian party. There's a perfectly good word for centrism, and it's called centrism. It's not libertarianism. So sometimes I think that people feel that we need to water down the principles or make them a more centrist position. But then I think you've lost the purpose for having a third party to begin with. If you're just trying to have a more middle of the road or libertarian light type point of view, I think you might be much more successful if you then just go and infiltrate the major parties and try to do that through them. They already have a vehicle where their main principle is winning at all costs, principled be damned. I think the whole purpose, and David Nolan had it right when he made out his case for a Libertarian Party in 1972, is that we are to be the vanguards. So there is a tension within the party of those who are seeking more to move towards the middle, and those who are saying, no, the only way we're going to move the Overton window is to push the envelope, which means we need to be on the bleeding edge. And we have been as a party on the bleeding edge. And I think even though we might not have done it through the legislation ourselves, I think the whole idea of libertarian ideas consistently getting out there is what has led to victories such as like we have in Colorado with recreational marijuana being legalized. Now, would I prefer not having the burdensome regulation that we see here? Sure, but that's next. To at least get it that people aren't being thrown in cages for it is a wonderful thing. So there is a division as to, should we, for instance, if I'm going to talk about taxation, should I actually say to Joe American, taxation is theft, we need to get rid of all taxation? Some libertarians would say, no, that's going to scare the crap out of them. The soccer moms in Peoria won't like it. I say, I will take any step forward to liberty that's a genuine step toward liberty, but I will always state what the end goal is, because if you incrementalize your goal, you often make the increment the goal rather than the goal the goal. And that is, I think, a philosophical difference within the party right now.
I don't think there's anybody who would accuse me of being a squish on libertarian issues. But when it comes to trying to persuade somebody who's a newbie, or let's say who's at least mildly interested, I think I take a bit of a different approach from some people, because I'll sometimes see on my Facebook page people will be saying, how do I explain to my friends how the roads would be built? Now, these are friends who are like mainstream Democrats, and he wants to know how he's going to answer the road objection. And I feel like the road thing, I'm sure we can answer it, but that would be one of my last five things. I said, for the time being, I would basically say to them, look, if they won't accept obvious things like getting rid of milk subsidies or whatever, they can't possibly be expected to be really interested in what you have to say about roads, which would just seem totally out there. I would almost grant them the roads for the time being until I persuade them of everything else. I wouldn't start with the most difficult thing for them to conceive of. I would start with things that are right before their faces. And then eventually what happens is what happened to me, that you get to a point where you see the benefits of the market in about 90% of cases, and you see the logic of it, and you think, well, I know the logic of it, and I know the practical real-world results of it, so I may not know how the last 10% are going to work, but I know that they will work because I've seen how they work in everything else, and then those things fall into place. That's my tack with people like that. I wouldn't immediately say, oh, well, here's how we could have a court system that's not monopolistic. They wouldn't even begin to talk to me, but if I could talk to them about the wars that are being waged by the government or the consequences of the Federal Reserve or whatever, then I get my foot in the door. That's just my approach.
Well, and I agree with that. I work a lot of outreach booths and talking with people who have no idea. But again, as we know as libertarians, people are individuals, and you have to find the issue that's going to get them to think. And for some people, it will be a little bit more extreme. If they've had run-ins with the government tax system or have been unfairly treated by the IRS, you can get right into some very heavy things. Or if they've had a relative that's been imprisoned on drug charges, you can get into sometimes some of the heavy legalize all the things type things. But if it's your average everyday person, yeah, sometimes you have to go with some of the lighter issues and show them the consistency of how this would work. I absolutely agree with you. I don't believe in setting your hair on fire and just running down the streets, you know, screaming legalize, you know, heroin, a prostitute on every corner. You know, that's not going to attract anybody. But I also don't think if we're asked a forthright question that we don't give a forthright answer. I don't believe in hiding the ball, but I also don't believe in what some people would call purposely macho flashing, you know, just being shocking. And let's see, you know, how, you know, if we could just, we think we're the hero if we've just been branded as the you know, the guy that they're worried is going to be running around with a Guy Fawkes mask on blowing up buildings. That is also not the impression we need to give. So there is definitely a tactical ground to take here. But I never believe in soft selling what we believe if the opportunity arises. So if you're talking with somebody, you're not going to lead with the roads. But if they forthrightly ask you a question, or if you're giving the overview of your philosophy, I don't think it services anybody to I don't like feeling like we're conning people out of their vote by selling them on something that isn't really what we're offering.
Yeah, I totally agree about. Now, given your position with the Radical Caucus, I guess I just also am curious to know, there must have been people on that Radical Caucus who were unhappy with the nomination of Gary Johnson. For all his merits, there must have been people who were unhappy. There must have been people who didn't vote for him. Can you say anything about that?
There definitely were. There were people in the Radical Caucus who wanted us as a caucus to take a stand against the candidates, and I think that's very foolish. When you're working within a political party, you've accepted the system. You've accepted the fact that we nominate candidates through a certain process, and when the process has taken place, then we work to support the party. We are Libertarian Party partisans, and we exist to grow the party. If people were not happy with the top of the ticket, there were plenty of wonderful local candidates, and I firmly believe that is where the action is at, and plenty of local initiatives to take place in. All the bellyaching about what someone doesn't like is just a distraction. We're too few in number, and there are so many places to help. If you don't like that, fine. Get active someplace else. I can tell you in Colorado, where we were fighting Colorado Care, you know, if you didn't like our top ticket, then there was plenty for you to do in Colorado. You didn't have to work on that. I believe in going for what you're for rather than what you're against. You're always going to find something to be unhappy with.
Now, when you say you're in a political party, you got to go along with the system. I do understand that. If you're really going to be an activist in the party, you probably got to take your lumps and you got to take the good with the bad. But yet, sometimes it's the bad is really bad. When Bill Weld got involved with the party, I remember him as governor of Massachusetts. And as governor of Massachusetts, I thought he was pretty okay. I was okay with him. That was back like in 1990-ish or so when I lived there. But I've followed him a little bit since, and I knew he was bad news. But he said that, no, look, he's in the Libertarian Party, and he's committed to it. Is he? Is there any word that he's doing anything with the Libertarian Party anymore? Or basically, did he chew it up and spit it out?
I don't get involved in that much of the portion, so I'm not trying to slough off an answer here. I'll tell you what I do know. I have heard through people who are more involved. Again, my focus is usually a lot more local and in my 9 states. As you know, I'm a regional representative, so my focus isn't so much the whole country, but my 9 states. But I have heard through our chairman that Governor Weld intends upon staying involved and helping the Libertarian Party. Has there been any concrete action of that yet? I have to confess ignorance. I don't know, but I can tell you that I've heard that is his full intentions, and I haven't heard anything to contradict that.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to wait and see. It's just that we did also hear him say that he would be quite happy to try to work to rebuild the Republican Party, you know, with Nikki Haley and whoever else. Now, that was before Trump won. I think he was expecting Hillary to win, and everybody would be interested in Bill Weld's opinion about how to remake the party. I think right now there is much less interest in Bill Weld's opinion about the Republican Party. So what do you say to libertarians who say political activism is a waste of time? I am sure you have heard that objection.
Well, I hear that objection a lot, particularly since I am from the more, well, not the more, I am from the actual anarchist camp. So I do hear that quite a bit. But I, you know, everybody has their own bailiwick. And if political activism isn't for somebody, I don't begrudge them that. I don't go out of my way to criticize people who won't get politically involved. The analogy I like to give, though, is that a system has been put into place that allows us to get into the system to dismantle the parts of the system that are evil. And I view it almost like a computer virus. So if I can be inserted in like a virus to bring down the bad program, I have absolutely no ethical problem with that. And I think it's a form of defensive activism. So I've never related to people who say political activism is a waste of time. I agree again completely with our party founder, who had said we will get more exposure and into different arenas and people will hear us differently if we use the political process. It's been given to us to use. I think it is foolish not to use every avenue that's open to you. It's kind of goes in with my no particular orderism, where I said strike at the root wherever and whenever the opportunity presents itself. I'll participate in agorism. I'll participate in any other way to bring about greater freedom, but I will also participate in the political process if that is going to bring greater freedom and start to change hearts and minds.
Is there a website you'd like to direct people to? I mean, other than the LP website, of course.
Of course, I would always direct everyone to the LP website and want to give a little push here. I hope that there are some people who maybe thought, oh my goodness, you know, the LP is not for me. They, you know, this, that, you know, all the complaints. I hope that hearing that there are people like me might invigorate some people. I would love to have you fighting by our side. So obviously LP.org and join, sign up. We put the money to good use. But I also would like to direct people, if I did kindle and some kind of interest, would be to the Radical Caucus, which is LPRadicalCaucus.org. We are not a social club. We are not a debate club. We are a real caucus doing real political work in this party, and we would love to have other warriors for liberty there. So that was LPRadicalCaucus.org.
All right. I will link to those sites at tomwoods.com/844, which is our show notes page. And that Dallas Accord, I'd like to link to that. Am I going to be able to find that online?
Huh. That is, you know, the thing is, I started working on this as a historical project beginning even a couple years ago. I do intend upon soon publishing a formal paper on this. But what I would like to do is I did, which I had sent to you previously, the color-coded changes of the things that had changed between 72 and 74, which is the only formalization of the Dallas Accord changes. And if I sent that to you, I think if you linked to that file, it would be extraordinarily helpful to your listeners. But in general, I would solicit, you know, I'm always on Facebook, I'm all over the place. I'd be more than glad to speak with people and mentor them on this particular issue. But the shame is, no, there isn't a great deal working on this. And after I do the convention circuit this year, I've been invited to a ton of state conventions. I'm going to Montana in a couple weeks. That when I'm done with this circuit, because I have people coming up to me, goes, I was at that convention, and they're giving me even more information, that a formal paper, as it were, will be published on the Dallas Accord and the Statement of Principles.
Very interesting. Okay. Well, Karen Ann Harlos, I appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Tom.
All right, everybody. I think you're going to be interested in these things. I hope, anyway. I have a brand new free ebook for you. It's called Sane Space, Libertarian Dispatches from Bizarro America. You can grab it at sanespacebook.com. sanespacebook.com. It's fun. It smashes bad guys, it's entertaining, but also informative. That's what I aim to do here. So check it out at sanespacebook.com. Secondly, you know that I'm going to be speaking in San Diego this month, February 25th, 2017. But you may not know that it was just announced that Overstock.com CEO Patrick Byrne will now be keynoting that event. That's a brand new announcement, and it's going to be tremendous. He's great. I had him on this show, I don't know, many episodes ago. TomWoods.com/episodes gives you all the episodes on a single page. It's going to be a tremendous time. I'm already way booked for the escape room with my supporting listeners that I'm doing. I'm paying for everybody to go and do an escape room, and we're going to have a lot of fun there. But anyway, definitely check that out. If you're interested, you're in the area, it's going to be a wonderful event. You can get the details on all my events at TomWoods.com/events. All right, that's it for today. Remember, if you're enjoying the show, join the elite as a supporting listener at SupportingListeners.com. I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.